Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and I am very happy to welcome Mr. Keith Parrish. You know Keith from the a few different podcasts, Fast Break Breakfast, as well as Grit and Grind. But one of the more entertaining, in my opinion, NBA follows and Grizzlies follows out there. Keith, how are you? And thanks for joining us, sir.
I'm good, Sean. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to finally get to talk with you. As I told Keith, I got into the blogging podcasting game about 2 years ago, and ever since then, he's been one of my favorite follows. If you don't follow him, you're missing out. He even shows up on those banners in the Game of Zones parody. So the man has his connections. But no, we wanted to invite Keith because, as always, as most of you know, a lot of interesting takes. So we'll just jump right into it. So Keith, 6 games into the bubble, the Grizzlies have had, you could probably say, more struggles than successes. A lot of it unplanned. But it looks like that the Grizzlies in general, they have adjusted, have made some improvements. After the Thunder game, in which they played well against the Raptors, it was just a lack of execution. You don't plan for the Grizzlies to sit there and have 22 turnovers. I'm going to expect for them to win.
Right. I guess you, if they were going to have 22 turnovers, you'd probably pencil it in for the Raptors game. So I do feel like the Grizzlies have played hard, and we feel bad because the results haven't been there, but also they've been in all these games. They've competed in all the games. It felt like earlier in the bubble, to my eye, they were playing worse. I thought they had like the first half against the Trailblazers, the first half against the Pelicans, the whole game against the Spurs. I was like, it didn't feel like they were playing that well, but they were in all those games down to the wire. And then even in these games where they haven't felt as close, like the Raptors game, where they're in it for the first half, they fall down big, but then they fight back and get back in it. So, I've been pleasantly surprised with the performance, I guess, after the first few games. I think coming into it, I expected more. But since then, it's like, they're shorthanded. Not having Jaren Jackson Jr., missing Tyus Jones the whole time, I'm actually like pleasantly surprised with how they're playing with Jaw off the court and that they are fighting hard and staying in these games.
Agreed completely. And that's one thing we'll get into in the second is that, you bring up a good point with Jaw off the court. When the bench at first, was a struggle. It was such an asset before the suspension coming into the bubble. It wasn't there, showing how big of a loss Tyus was, but it certainly has improved. But like you talked about with the injuries that have occurred, a little bit less room for error. And of course, that turns our attention to Dylan Brooks. You've got 22 turnovers, but you add on top of that 8 to 10 possessions wasted by Dylan shooting the ball. It's not the shot necessarily, in my opinion, that is frustrating. It's the utilization of the shot. It's not seeing an offensive scheme through to get a good percentage shot instead of forcing it. How much is that on Dylan, and how much do you put that on Jenkins at this point?
You have to give some culpability to Jenkins for leaving him out there so long and with such freedom. And it's been the whole season. I mean, there were times he was on, but I like how you put that there's 8 to 10 possessions wasted. And that's exactly what happened, where in the Raptors game, he takes 26 field goal attempts. He ends up with 25 points, but he wasted at least 10 of those possessions with just bad shots. And I was saying on Grits and Grinds on my episode this morning, one of the more frustrating elements outside of just seeing the bad shot selection is the fact that in the Raptors game, when Dylan took a good shot, he shot an incredible percentage. He knocked down most of his open shots when he put the ball on the court, on the floor, and drove towards the bucket. He had a couple wild finishes, but most of them were very under control, like good shots. If you throw out the 12 bad shots, I think he made maybe 2 of those. And then you look at it like, oh, wow, if he had been, I don't remember his final stats were, but like if he was 8 for 16 from the field for 17 or 18 points, it's like a different ball game in my mind. Like they couldn't afford to lose those extra possessions in addition to all those turnovers, like you pointed out.
No, and if you look at the final stats, 25 points is great. Him and Ja were both 18 of 45, but a lot of that was because of, just easier opportunities in the fourth quarter. Before the end of the third quarter, they were 10 for 33. So I get the decision-making, I understand it. But you pointed it out yesterday in one of those. I feel like that picture of Dylan taking the three with 3 men on him and Grayson in the corner open for the shot, I feel like that's going to be a meme for Grizzlies fans for the next year of when things go bad, of bad decisions. But that right there just encompasses the whole thing. Dylan just seems to feel like his only way of getting out of a slump is to keep shooting more. And it just, I have a hard time believing, as talented as he is not, he doesn't have enough wit about him to know, hey, I've got to find other ways to contribute.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he really can't, literally can't get out of the funk if he doesn't just keep shooting. But I've hit the position where I feel like his minutes have become so damaging overall that even when he gets on, I don't know if it's worth it. I mean, he's on basically one out of three games or something. And that stat, one of the stats I like to point out, that the Grizzlies are 21-4 when he shoots over 45% from the field. And against the Raptors on, against the Thunder on whenever that was, Friday, that was just the third time all season he'd done it against a team with a winning record.
Yes. So
like normally he does it against bad teams. And people are like, oh, if Dylan scores 20 points, the Grizzlies are whatever it is, 19-5. It's like, well, yeah, they are prisoners to what Dylan Brooks does. Like if he's off, if Dylan Brooks isn't making his shots, the Grizzlies win 25% of their games approximately, which is nix, which is the bottom of the league. So like the Grizzlies are right now prisoner to Dylan Brooks' shooting whims. And if he's not making his shots, which is about 2/3 of the time, they're basically losing. And I would rather not be a prisoner to Dylan Brooks. I would rather lose with maybe better shot selection. And maybe that's just a preferential thing. Like that's not right or wrong. Maybe you enjoy rolling the dice of Dylan Brooks. I enjoy like, oh, wow, our offense is terrible because we're playing John Conchar, D'Anthony Melton, and Kyle Anderson at the same time. But we're not really taking bad shots. We're playing good defense and we're struggling to score. And that's why we're losing. Like I prefer that way of losing, but you know, to each their own.
Well, no, and you bring up a good point. The 21-4, the interesting stat that I'd like to look at is between when Dylan Brooks basically was hot, when he was playing in an elevated level, when you pointed out when the Grizzlies were playing better than the Golden State Warriors during their championship year.
Yeah,
I'd look how many of those 21 games happened between December and January when the Grizzlies played 11 of 30 teams with winning records. That's when Dylan really set his mark. And so now we're seeing against more talented teams, it's a bit harder set up for him. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Keith a little bit more about some of the lineup setups that Taylor Jenkins has shown preference for. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all our listeners 25% off your next order when you use That's CBDMD.com promo code MBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Again, joined by Keith Parrish. And, you know, Keith, I told you a lot of times you seem to bring up stats that just, I know I'm thinking about, other people are thinking about, so it's like, this makes sense. You bring up a lot of lineup stats, and one thing that I think is very particular about lineup stats is that, you know, you have to piece them together. You have to know what they indicate and what they don't indicate. But one thing that you've always talked about is that the death lineup, I believe it was Jaw, Melton, Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, and Jaren Jackson, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. The main reason why you put Clark, Melton, and Anderson in there with Jackson Jr. and Morant is because those three guys are at the top of the Grizzlies' best lineups. Do you feel Jenkins' usage of those three players, Melton, Clark, and Anderson, do you feel it's been good in the bubble? Do you feel he's maximized their opportunities?
I mean, I guess you have to look at him individually. I am pleased that he's maximized Brandon Clark's minutes in the bubble. Yeah. I think before the season shutdown, it was always the question of like, why isn't Brandon Clark playing more? He seems to have an incredibly positive impact anytime he comes in the game. As far as Kyle Anderson, I'm like a huge Kyle Anderson fan. I think he's a guy that no matter when you put him out there, he basically helps. He's always helping. There's bad lineups that he's a part of because of his offensive limitations, but he's always helping. And you mentioned that death lineup, which is a lineup clearly the Grizzlies had no interest in using all season. Coming into this season, I was basically circling that lineup because it was like my favorite players on the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. I was like, in my mind, it seems like this lineup would work. John Morant, D'Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, and Jaren Jackson Jr. And a lot of people were pointing out all season, like, Kyle Anderson shouldn't play the three because of he doesn't provide any spacing. But when you have Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark, guys who can both step out to the three-point line, and guys who aren't that great at rebounding, I thought it made sense to pair Kyle Anderson with those three guys. And so this is one of those things where all season it was just confirmation bias to me, and that's why I'm pulling out those random stats that support my argument. I know that's not the proper unbiased way to use stats, but because it was something I'd circled early in the season, and then every time those three guys played together, I'm like, this is Grizzlies success. This is Grizzlies success. And we finished the year with that death lineup played, I think, cleaning the glass, clocked him at maybe like 23 possessions, which is literally nothing. It's an absolute useless sample size, but I still, again, because I'm a propagandist as much as anything, was circling like they're plus 130 points per 100 possessions, which again is like they played a fourth of a game together and they had a good run. But I guess that is to answer the question, do I think if Taylor Jenkins has done a good job with Melton, Anderson, and Clark in the bubble? Short answer is no overall, because I still don't understand why Melton and Kyle Anderson aren't getting more minutes with the Grizzlies so shorthanded.
That's fair enough. And the other thing I'll ask you about this, Keith, is that when it comes to, you know, again, you talk about using stats to, you know, match your points and things like that. But at the end of the day, they're numbers, they're facts. They're hard to deny when you have a big enough sample size. The thing I'll say is this is kind of in the case of Tolliver and Clark. Clark seemed to be the natural fit to start when Jaren Jackson Jr. went down. But when he went into the starting lineups, numbers show he struggled. So they put Tolliver back in to replace Jackson's shooting as much as possible, put Clark on the bench where he's most effective, and it's worked out. Like, the Grizzlies look better in that case. What do you think it comes down to when it comes down to numbers versus feel? Do you think you have to have a balance of both? One's better than the other in a certain situation? What are your thoughts as far as the overall lineup numbers would have in decision-making for coaching staffs?
I mean, the coaches know way more than I do, and that the, you know, all of us Grizzlies fans and bloggers and podcasters know. I assume they have their own data that spells out different stories than what I have. And I assume they're going by that and by feel, and they know what works in practices. We're not privy to practices. We don't see what's going on there. We can only see what happens basically in the games and what's presented to us. So, I mean, if I'm a guy sitting at home on my couch with my laptop open watching the Grizzlies play, I don't even know if I'm even going by feel or numbers. I just feel like, you know, there's some lineups I feel like make sense and the numbers are bad on them. I can't remember what it was, but like for the season, it was like when Ja and Brandon and Jaren Jackson Jr. played together, the Grizzlies weren't that successful. Their net rating was comfortably in the negative. And it does feel like those guys should play together. And then you have to weigh in like the long-term, I guess, journey of the franchise and the goals of each individual season. And you're like, all right, but we want Ja and Jaren and Brandon to play together because they're our young core. We're going forward. So I don't think I have a particular feel versus the numbers opinion. I just, you know, I guess I have the things I think would work, and I guess I actually go more by feel, even though I do like to cite numbers for them. I feel like I might be cherry picking numbers to support the subjective feel that I have.
Yeah, and it's so customized based off the situation that you're looking at, of course, as well. We're going to take our final break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to discuss Ja and Jonas, their performances so far in the bubble. Say it with me. Sports are back, baby. I've been waiting a while to say that. And now that it's here, I've finally got one thing on my mind, MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime, game-winning shot all wrapped into one. I love it, you love it, and that should be all that you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and with sports now back, there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie is accepting bids right now on all these games, and there's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting with Sports Now Back. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. So welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. We're finishing up here with Keith Parrish. Again, thank you so much, Keith, for joining us. The thing that I'll say, Keith, about Ja Morant and Jonas Valanciunas is I think they were two maybe the most interesting players looking at the Grizzlies when it came to the bubble. Jonas, okay, he's in a playoff-type atmosphere. What is his usage going to be like? We now have a better idea. Ja, how is he going to produce, struggle, have successes? It seems like he's definitely a closer with his energy as lineups get fatigued in the fourth quarter, which has helped the Grizzlies stay in games. When it comes to Ja first, the biggest positive takeaway and potentially the biggest, you know, this needs improvement takeaway you've seen from him in the bubble so far?
I think the biggest improvement that I see that is needed is it feels like he's too casual at times and he's too deferential at times, a little loose with the ball. His turnovers are high. But then again, you have to weigh that against he's doing this for the first time and the Grizzlies don't have many other options. They have no other real creators or scorers on the wing. There's not other players who can create their own shot outside of Dylan Brooks. And we've already harped on the fact that the shots he creates aren't that awesome. So, you know, like you'd hope to see Ja improve where I feel like he maybe is too cocky at times and will go into the paint where he's just loose with the dribble and ends up leaving his feet and either having the ball stripped or he throws it away. But that's like nitpicking. Basically, I'm very pleased with what he's shown in the bubble. His minutes per game has skyrocketed as there's no Tyus Jones and they're saying, hey, play 38 minutes per game. And he's doing it. He's still finishing strong in fourth quarters all season. They would give him low minutes, and he would be a little bit deferential throughout the first three quarters, and then he would always play a big chunk of the fourth quarters, and that ended up with him being, you know, one of the best fourth quarter scorers in the NBA, having one of the best field goal percentages among those top 10 fourth quarter scorers in the NBA, and we're still seeing that, and he's absolutely the top thing on the other team's scouting report as far as what they have to stop. I mean, maybe I guess the Raptors said we're going to stop Jonas Valanciunas, and you know that led to Jonas's horrifying no point four turnover stat line against the Raptors. But the fact that he is clearly the main focus of the other team and he's delivering, his field goal percentage has dipped, but he's seeing a defensive focus on him that he's never seen before. And again, he's a rookie. So I'm not discouraged. I've been definitely encouraged by like all the stuff they've asked him to do and how he's delivered.
When it comes to Jonas, you know, when he was extended last summer, there was a lot of talk about, you know, what does he fit for the Grizzlies? And when the Grizzlies, you know, came into being a playoff contender, do they want to invest this much money in a piece that's probably not going to be used that much? Well, Taylor Jenkins, one critique I have of Taylor Jenkins, I don't think that Jonas has been consistently used enough when he was a matchup, especially in the first couple of games. Yeah. Spurs come to mind. You released a stat about Dylan Brooks. 3 of 21 in the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter with the Grizzlies in five, I believe, in the bubble. The Grizzlies need Jonas and Ja at that point to get offense, and Jonas just has not been used. Have you been surprised by his lack of usage then, or do you think it's pretty on par from what we could have expected?
Well, to correct the stat, Dylan Brooks was in clutch situations for the entire season, which is, within five points in the last 5 minutes of the game. He was 3 for 21. He actually hit a shot on Sunday against the Raptors to bring them from within 5-3. And that was the first clutch time basket Dylan Brooks had made in 8 months. It was the first clutch time basket since I think January 7th. But anyway, no, I was a little surprised in the first couple games that they did not put Jonas back in the fourth quarters. And I don't know if that was a predetermined game plan to stick with the young guys, to stick with the guys who had no playoff experience, to say, we're going to get these high pressure reps to Brandon and Jaron in the front court, and we're not going back to Jonas, even if the Spurs are playing Drew Eubanks. Is that his first name? Anyway, Eubanks. And when Jusuf Nurkić fouled out in the game against the Trailblazers in overtime, and they still seemed like they were sticking to their guns of this young lineup. I was a little surprised that they didn't go back to Valanciunas. Since Jaron's been hurt, you know, they have to play Jonas more. And it does seem like they've struggled to find a way to get him the ball and try to get him some touches. But I guess on Taylor Jenkins, you know, to argue for him, Jonas has been, when the defense is focused on him, like he struggled a little bit. He hasn't been ready for the double team. And maybe that's a coaching thing, that they weren't prepared for the Raptors double teaming him all the time. But he's struggled in the small opportunities that he's been presented so far in fourth quarters. But I do think I would like to see them go to him more. It's not a very 2020 request, but I find myself yearning for post-ups to try to slow things down and to make the Grizzlies look less hectic at the end of games.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I have been pleasantly surprised by the job Brandon Clark chemistry that's been there. But at the end of the day, I think you got to go with what's the reliable source of scoring, especially when your options are lower, and Jonas just seems to be that option. Well, Keith, we'll end it with this. And I also wanted to say thank you very much for the math, the frequent math on the standings in the bubble, letting us know what's going on with the Grizzlies and their chances and things such as that. Everybody's got two games left, starting up today, obviously. How do you see it playing out? And do you think at the end, we all know the Grizzlies probably are going to have to rely on the Celtics and Bucks sitting some people. How confident are you that the Grizzlies will get in the playoffs against the Lakers?
I'm not very confident at all. I was talking with Tom Westerholm, Celtics beat reporter on Grits and Grinds this morning. He said that the Celtics are probably not resting anyone. They're trying to ramp up their minutes to get ready for the playoffs. So the Grizzlies are likely to play a full strength Celtics squad. And then, so you're basically, you know, so I guess the Grizzlies are going to be underdogs there. I don't know if you give them like a 35% chance of beating the Celtics, which is honestly what like any team has in any game. And then you're playing the Bucks, and you hope that maybe the Bucks will rest Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis is being held out of today's game with a toothache. And so you just don't know. I mean, the Grizzlies, unfortunately, are now in the position where they have to win. I mean, they don't have to win, but it looks like so the Spurs need to lose to either the Rockets or the Jazz. We know the Rockets aren't playing James Harden against the Spurs tomorrow. And then the Suns are playing OKC as we talk right now. They're going to play the Sixers, who are without Ben Simmons and maybe Joel Embiid. And then we don't know what the Mavericks are going to be doing. Basically, we can't depend on anyone else losing. We've hit this point now. We assume the Trailblazers, they're going to play the Mavericks on Tuesday. Luka and Porzingis are not playing in the game today, so maybe they will play on Tuesday. Long and short of it, the Grizzlies need to win a game. And, you know, it's a very reasonable and fair request for the Grizzlies to win a game. If you told me before this all started, like, hey, if you go 3-5, you'll be the 8 seed. If you go 2-6, you'll be the play-in. If you go 1-7, you're out. I'm like, that seems fair. Like, I don't have a problem with that. And that is basically what the Grizzlies got. They did not get the help they needed from the Sixers on Sunday. And the Trailblazers look strong. I mean, I don't think the Grizzlies can beat the Trailblazers two games in a row, especially if Tyus Jones never comes back. I don't think it's out of the question, but that's a tough ask. So to make it to the 8th seed, the Grizzlies need to win one game and have the Trailblazers win a game. And I don't know how to handicap that. I wouldn't say it's likely, but it's definitely possible. But no, that's a very long way of saying I am now thinking it is definitely more likely than not that the Grizzlies miss the playoffs.
I agree with you. And it's just come down to the simple concept of you always want to have more in your control than out of your control. And at this point, we just need for Mike Budenholzer to be a bud of Taylor Jenkins and just have everybody catch the contagious toothache of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Hey, Keith, it's been a privilege getting to talk with you, sir. What do you have coming up or anything you'd like to promote to our listeners? Obviously, probably a lot of the same listeners as you on Grit and Grind, the Fast Break Breakfast. Anything you've got coming up as the bubble proceeds?
No, I just say, once you listen to your Locked On Grizzlies, make sure you're subscribed to Grits and Grinds. It's all Grizzlies talk all the time. And then Fast Break Breakfast, if you want an entertaining look at the entire league, check that out.
Yep. Keith Parrish, he's one of the more entertaining and just thorough minds out there when it comes to Grizzlies basketball. Can't thank him enough. Remember, you can follow our show. Subscribe to Grits and Grinds. Subscribe to Fast Break Breakfast and Locked On Grizzlies. Myself at StatsAC, Mark King at King_producer, and the podcast Locked On Grizz. For Keith Parrish, Sean Coleman, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.